Welcome to the Innovation World Young Collaborator podcast series. Today's podcast is titled, Let's Start a Farm on Mars. My name is Sid. This is the person who's going to be interviewing another person. I am 9 years old and I live in Carlisle, Massachusetts, USA. Today's guest comes to us from Columbus, Ohio, USA. You may know of that place. I first learned of his work during my very first global innovation field trip, and was totally fascinated. Here is the one and only Jim Bruner. Mind if I call you Jim?
No, I don't mind at all, Sid.
So let's tell everybody who's listening a few facts about Jim. He's the alpha farmer and the alpha animal at the Mezzocello Urban Farm. He started Project Martian at the beginning of the COVID-19 lockdown. Designed a sustainable way to be able to grow food and access fresh water in any location on the Earth, the Moon, and you guessed it, even on Mars. He came up with the bioreactor design on a tissue to develop soil rich in nutrients and sufficient to turn any dirt matrix to rich nutrient soil. Just to name a few of his achievements, City of Columbus Green Spot Award winner, keynote speech at Columbus Zoo, and Aquarium's 2022 Teen Eco Summit, and last of all, which I believe all of us are going to be knowing this already, serial participant in the Global Innovation Summit. Yes. Please welcome Jim Bruner to the show.
Yay! Thank you, Sid. That was lovely. I had forgotten I'd done a lot of those.
Thank you. Could you please give us all of the people viewing and me and Julie in the background there a short description of the work that you've been doing?
Yeah, everything you said is true. I started Mezzocello before the pandemic, but during the pandemic, I was here at my house and I was curious about how I could accelerate compost, and that led to my interest in biochemistry and how I could integrate chemicals to make the compost basically erode and degrade faster. And that led to the discovery of prebiotic process fluid that comes out of the bottom of the bioreactor that is an amazing fertilizer that I call Eden's Ghost. Eden, because it can either bring paradise or disaster, and ghost, because it can bring anything near death back to life. And from there, I just keep innovating. One thing to another leads to another question. And, you know, just like you, I just keep inventing new ways of thinking about the problem.
Fascinating explanation. And thank you for giving us a description of the work that you've been doing. I'm guessing some of our audience want to know a bit more about Mezzocello Urban Farm, because you explained a little bit. I know you explained this all in GIFT, but I think people would want to know more.
Okay, sure. Thank you. Mezzocello Urban Farm is my house. It's in downtown Columbus. So when I look out my window, I see the tops of trees and skyscrapers. It is a third of an acre, and it is divided into 7 enclosed, interconnected ecosystems. Some of them are formal gardens. Some of them are parterre gardens. Some of them are herb gardens. There's a pond. I keep chickens, ducks, rabbits, crickets, mealworms, worms, and fish. And I raise them all for a variety of reasons: food sources, protein, manure, feathers, egg, meat. And I also grow my own vegetables. And almost all of my farming is facilitated, or at least makes my life easier, through the use of robotics, sensors, solar power, and wind turbines, because I get a lot of power from traffic on the major street just outside my farm, where the buses go back and forth. And I noticed during pandemic that those buses make a lot of wind. So I started capturing wind energy, and it's quite a significant amount. But I also run summer camps for middle school kids your age, Sid, actually, so they can learn about this technology as well and apply it in their lives. And I have a website that is mezzocello.org, and everything I do is on that website. Just search for it. And that's it.
I already have it in another tab. Really? Thanks.
What was the question, Sid?
Yeah. What?
I didn't hear what you said.
I was just saying how that is a fascinating explanation. I'm not going to keep on saying fascinating explanation for everything you say, but it truly was a really good explanation about how your gigantic farm is gigantic. I can say it myself. So my next question to you that will give me information and many of the people out there. What got you interested in the first place? Like the first place, not the zeroth place, the first place, not the second place, the first place. What is the first step of this gigantic innovation?
Okay. I have an autoimmune disease that destroyed my esophagus. And so for 4 years, I never ate anything. Everything I ate came through a tube in my stomach. And I remember thinking how nice it would be to be able to chew food again or just to eat something. And during that time, I thought, if I ever get the opportunity to eat again, I am never eating trash food again. It's so not worth it. And while trash food isn't why I lost my esophagus, I realized that being able to eat food, healthy food, is a privilege. And when I was able to eat again, I founded Mezzocello so that I could create ways of creating fresh, wholesome food easily. And that is how Mezzocello got started.
Okay, I have simply no words. I never knew about this, disaster early on. But there's always good to bad things. And the good thing that has resulted from that disaster is your lovely farm called Mezzocello. So next question. We have heard of your 17 sustainable, well, not yours, but the 17 sustainable development goals that you follow. Do you want to explain to our audience how you sustain these goals in your life and on your farm and how you're helping the ecosystem while you're at it?
Yes, I'm very passionate about this. Thank you for bringing this up, Sid. I think that the UN 17 Sustainable Development Goals, or the SDGs, are really important for three primary reasons. The first is it allows people to look at the really big, wicked problem of climate change through a new lens that relates everything from the individual through to the family, to the village, to your state or region or country, all the way up to the planet and the way that we share the planet with other animals, the way that we share the oceans, and how our societies need to work together to protect the only place in the universe we know life exists, and that's here on Earth. We don't own this planet. I don't own it. You don't own it. None of our viewers own it. We all borrow it, and we borrow it from the generation that comes after us. So I'm borrowing this opportunity to be a good steward for the climate and for the planet. I'm borrowing it from you, Sid, and I need to pay it back. And the way that I follow this is I started a blog post campaign where I took all 17 of the SDGs and I wrote exactly what I'm doing at Mezzocello to address that specific goal. Like the first goal is to end poverty. The way I go about doing that is I create food and I donate it. I volunteer, I give my time, I donate to charitable organizations, and I encourage other charitable organizations to work together to make everybody's life not only bearable, but worth living. Poverty is unnecessary in a world of plenty. And all the way up, step by step by step by step, I keep paying it forward. The second one, end hunger, same principle. The third one, which is the access to resources. I do all of these, all the way through purifying water, which is what the biodome is actually doing now. It purifies and collects water from the atmosphere so I can reuse it, to energy generation, and then up through economic development, responsible use of materials and reuse of materials, and straight up the line, the proper treatment of animals, humanity, gender equality, equity between people. I encourage the three laws of Mezzocello are: first, do no harm. Second, kindness matters. Do everything you can for the right reason. And kindness is always the right reason, as is compassion. And be curious, ask questions. And when you fail, fail forward and keep going. Apply what you've learned from that failure. Dry your tears. Don't waste that water. Keep working. And I work all the way through all 17 of those goals. And then you know what I do after that, Sid?
No.
I start over again. And I reflect all the way back up through. Because the lessons that I learned doing all 17 of them, 17, the first time, I apply those lessons and do it again. And then I repeat it again and again and again. Because that's the only way we're going to change the world. We're not going to do it sitting on our hands, right?
No. We have to do some technology. We have to improve. We have to stand up. Any of those kind of things.
You know what my favorite quote is?
No.
People are afraid of change. And I get that. Change can be scary. And the Sustainable Development Goals require change. But my favorite quote is, old keys do not open new doors. If you're doing it the way you've always done it, you're not opening anything new, and you're not doing anything innovative, and you're not making the world better. You're only pushing the can, kicking the can down the road for someone else. And that's not what I believe in.
Okay, hi, that's a very detailed explanation that certainly tells me and our audience that you are one of the people that are actually working towards making Earth a good place to live in, worth living, and you are helping to stop all kinds of problems. That's the kind of person I like.
Yeah, I think that's good.
So, question number 4. How have you involved farm technology to these urban areas? I feel like people might be a bit unclear on the concept, so they would need a bit of more explanation.
Okay. I'll focus on two different strategies of technology that I'm using to make it more relevant. The city in which you live, is it bright and sunny or is it rainy?
I can't say because we don't live in a city. We live in a kind of forest. So I could say rainy.
Okay. So where I live, it is very rainy because I live in a part of the North American continent that is full of deciduous trees, not pine trees, but trees with leaves. So there's a lot of moisture in the atmosphere and it's humid in the summer, and snowy and rainy in the fall and winter. So the first of the technologies that I leverage is the bioreactor, which you referenced in my introduction. It not only collects water from the house and every structure on the property, but there are solar panels and microprocessors that power and control pumps that push all the water from these 1,000 liter cubes from the house and the sheds into the top of the bioreactor, which is almost 3 meters tall. In America, that would be 12 feet. And only in America, because America is the only country that uses Imperial. It drives me crazy. But anyway, so I have 1,000 liters of water on demand at all times. And there are sensors on the bioreactor that tell me what the humidity is, what the temperature is, what the wind is, what the weather is. And then I wrote an application I actually downloaded the application. It's a Python application that can predict the weather 5 days in advance. So there are sensors on top of the bioreactor that tell me basically what I can expect in the winter or the weather. And in the summertime and spring and fall, this is important because the bioreactor is 12 feet in the air, or almost 3 meters in the air. And the microprocessor on top has a pump that automatically waters all of my food gardens. I don't do anything. It pushes water up the pump. And as that water falls, that 2.5 meters, it's enough pressure that it can reach everywhere in the garden, and the garden waters itself. And if my prediction model, which I borrow from the weather, from NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration here in the United States, it won't water on days where it knows it's going to rain. So that's my first technology that I really love. And in the bottom of that, by the way, that rainwater, not only does it get purified, so it's useful for animals and watering food, it also creates compost, because in the bottom of the bioreactor, beneath that water, is where I keep all of my compost. And this system adds 1 liter each of cola, like soda, pop, whatever you call it, carbonated beverage with sugar in it, mostly sugar, beer, which I brew myself, because the fungus and the microbiomes need that energy in the form of yeast, and then ammonia, which is a critical component of compost, and that causes the compost to decompose rapidly. So instead of 6 months, it takes around 40 days. And then I just pull that cube out of the bottom and replace it with another cube that's preloaded with compost. And 45 days later, I pull that out. That's how I make the compost. So that's the first system. It's completely integrated, easy to use. One man can do all the work. A robot can do it even faster, leveraging gravity technology, solar panels, wind turbines, and batteries to power it all. Nothing is powered from the grid. The second system that I'm working on, and which I'll be talking about in April's Global Innovation Field Trip, is the Biodome Part 2. My original concept for the Biodome was an enclosed pressurized dome that I could grow hydroponic food in and raise chickens. So the chickens would walk on a floor, and as they release their waste, that waste would go into channels. Those channels would put that waste into a pit, which would then rot down, and then a pump after 30 days would take that and inject it into the hydroponic systems as a food source for the plants. Then the chickens would eat the plants at the bottom of the hydroponic tower, because the hydroponic tower was 2 meters tall, and at the top, I would process that for food. However, in Ohio, the sun is quite intense because of all that rain. When it is sunny, that biodome reached 45 degrees Celsius regularly. In America, that's 105 degrees Fahrenheit. Life could not be sustained there. So I had to abandon that project because I could not cool it. It took more energy than I could produce to cool it. Lesson learned. Now I bought, Sid, have you ever played on a dome that you can climb, like a geodesic dome?
I don't recall, but my mom's giving me a nod of her head, so I'll say yes.
It's made of metal, and I have two of them, and the dome itself is 10 feet wide, but it's only basically 1.48 meters wide, that's not true, 2.2 meters wide, but it's only like 1.9 meters tall. It's not tall enough for a man to stand in. So I bought another one, and I used parts from that second one to make the biodome ceiling 2.4 meters tall, which is a little bit under 8 feet in America. And that steel structure I can then cover, and I want it to be 45 degrees Celsius because that's where all eight of my water purification evaporation systems will be. And that heat will cause the water to evaporate even faster. And so all the wastewater, the water that the ducks swim in, the water that the fish put out in the bio pump and the biofilter, the water that kids wash their hands in, even the water that gets left from rain, I can put in those systems, and in 2 days, it'll be pure water. Dangerous to drink because it won't have any minerals in it. So I just need to add a little bit of potassium, a little bit of table salt, and a little bit of magnesium, and it's perfectly fine. I will use that water everywhere. As a matter of fact, we are building electrolysis engines, and we are going to be building a hydrogen fuel cell here this summer, because it runs on water. And that water with no mineral inserts in it is distilled water, and it's the perfect water to produce hydrogen and electricity from. So those are the two technologies that I'm currently evolving and working with on my urban farm in downtown Columbus, Ohio.
Wow. Okay.
Does that answer your question?
Yes, that answers my question completely. That gives me a lot of information. So my next question might be a bit useless because you might have answered a bit of it here, but I might as well ask it. How much is the percent of the energy that you use on your farm is renewable? For example, the solar energy that you use.
100%. I have 23 solar panels and 5 wind turbines. Each wind turbine is vertical, so it's more efficient in a low to the ground setting. And they each produce 400 watts. And it's been very windy the last couple of days. And my batteries are all topped off. I can't use the energy fast enough. So I have to think, when I go back through the 17 sustainable development goals, I need to figure out how I can share that energy with my neighbors. I haven't figured that out yet, but it's the right thing to do. And I'm working on that. But that's the next iteration. The solar panels do everything. They heat the water. They keep the water from freezing. They keep baby chickens alive. They open doors for the animals so they can get in and go in at night. I don't have to really do anything other than check systems. They run all the solar panels. They run all of the weather stations. They run the water pumps. I don't have to use power for my house, except very, very rarely. Like for something that is extremely energy drawing, like a power saw. If I use the battery, there's a good chance I won't have enough battery at night to run critical systems, especially in the winter, because my animals all count on that. But the farm itself is completely self-sufficient. The house is still on electrical, the city's electric, because the house was built in 1868. And so it's pretty old. It's 160 years old. It's a sturdy old house, but the last time the electric was updated in it was 1998. And so our electrical company will not allow me to put solar panels on the roof of my house because my electrical system needs to be upgraded. So I'm starting that process next month. They break ground on an addition that will allow me to turn my house completely solar, and that will only leave me with about 400 watts of power needs at a load at a time. So I'll still have to be tied into city power, but most of my energy, almost 80% of my energy, will come from renewables.
Okay, that answers my question and answers another question that I had, which was, does Jim Bruner lie lazily on his bed while machines work for him? The answer to that is yes. Thank you for giving the answer to that question.
Definitely.
On to
work smarter, right? What? Work smarter, not harder.
Yeah, that should be my motto or something like that. So my next question for you, which will be very interesting to hear because I could actually do something. So listening to your description, our listeners must be advised to start something in their backyard too, having technology, ecosystems, and many other things like that. Can you give them and me some quick steps to get started and basically make a farm?
I can, actually. So everyone asks me where I learned this, all of this. Sid, I am from Los Angeles, California. I know nothing about farming. I know nothing about robotics. I knew nothing about programming. I have a PhD in YouTube. So if you want to know what you should do first, start researching what's already been done. Because I spent a lot of time reinventing the wheel because I was ignorant of what had already been done. There is no crime. I'm saying this to every kid in the world. There is absolutely no crime or shame in being ignorant. The crime is remaining ignorant. If you find out you're wrong, admit it and move on. The first thing you need to do is research. And then you're going to design a solution. Draw it on paper first. It can be simple. You don't have to solve every problem. You can solve one problem and then solve the next and solve the next and the next and the next. But you have to design something so you can build something. And then you have to test it. You got to analyze, does this work? And if it doesn't work, then go back and modify it. We all of us modify things all the time. We don't even think twice about it, except when we're doing something new. And then it's like, oh, I don't want to have to do that. But that's all we do. That's what practice is, right? When you play a sport or an instrument or you do anything, you do it and you do it poorly, and then you do it better. That's life. If you start out in this thinking, I have to do it right the first time will be your last time. Do it right every time when you can. When you can't, be human. Say, okay, I'm going to try this again. And this time I know what not to do, which is a very valuable piece of insight. You don't have to create all of Mezzocello. I can't even say that. Mezzocello, you have to create something and build towards it. Mezzocello costs a lot of money, and I have to pay for that. But I know my reason, right? I know why I'm doing it. Some people play video games because they love winning. This is my winning. And my cheat code is building systems that do it for me. Decide what you're passionate about and become the very best version of you that can do that, and then own it. And then go out in the world and change it with the knowledge you have. That's my advice.
Okay, thanks. That's certainly going to help for me when I'm thinking about my various things that I've thought of. It'll help me invent them. And I'm sure some of the people that are listening to you are also in GIFT. And I suppose that they too need this advice. And now they have it. So they can start researching on their innovations.
The irony here is that every inventor automatically does this. It's the inventor way of life. We all do this. If you invent anything, you know you learn from failure. They're called iterations. We don't call them failures. We call them iterations or prototypes. But that's life.
True.
That's why I like you. You're willing to grow, and you're willing to innovate, and you're willing to be wrong and gracious when you're right.
Wow. I'm out of breath. That's a really good explanation. And I have a question for you that my mom and me put together. It's, you said in one of your prior interviews, you might remember this, but I was not there for it, so you won't remember me being there. You said that I don't live outside my environment. I am my environment. It was very motivating for me. Can you explain more about this mantra to our audience so that they can absorb the knowledge?
Sure. I'm glad you brought that up because I also like that quote. I said it and I didn't realize, I guess, how profound it was when I thought it. But I'm glad I said it and I'm glad you brought it up. The problem that we have today is we have this idea that we live on the earth and not that we live with the earth. We're confident and comfortable changing everything but ourselves. So at Mezzocello, I make a very, very conscious effort that everything I do cannot, must not impact the other life on the farm that's here already, it cannot impact it in a negative way. If there are birds that want to live in my trees and eat my fruit and eat my vegetables, they must do that. When I force them away, what I am doing is I'm pushing nature away. And I need nature because I don't live outside of nature. I live within nature. I am also one of the animals that lives here at Mezzocello. And that is why I call myself the alpha animal, because I know my place in the ecosystem. My place in the ecosystem is sheriff. And I make sure that every citizen that lives in my ecosystems, all of them, has a fair hand at life. If they need water, if they need air, if they need space, even if they are destructive, I can control them and not destroy them, because I can guarantee you, if they're here, nature has already taken advantage of them and is trying to figure out how the other animals and microorganisms and ecosystems need them. Now, this is true to a point, because there are some things that humans, in their ignorance, bring into an ecosystem that should not be there. In my state, we have a Great Lake, which is, if you don't know this, Great Lakes are huge lakes of fresh water between the countries of Canada and North America. And you can get to them from the Atlantic Ocean, and you can get to them from the Gulf of Mexico. And when that happens, ships from around the world bring other organisms that do not live in that ecosystem, namely the zebra mussel. And the zebra mussel has no natural predators in natural freshwater lake, so they grow exponentially and they start clogging everything up. So what do we need to do? Well, the first thing we need to do is stop bringing invasive species into a vulnerable ecosystem. The second thing we need to do is figure out how we can use zebra mussels. And as it turns out, zebra mussels are an excellent form of concrete. And if you process them, you can 3D print with the abalone in their shells a very, very strong concrete that is also not labor intensive and doesn't produce as much CO2 in the environment as lime produced concrete does. So with effort, we can turn something bad into something useful, but you need to respect the life that's there, and you need to honor the life that's there and treat it with dignity. Always lead with kindness and dignity and figure out what you're going to do next. But don't destroy for the act of destroying. And certainly don't destroy because you can. That's why I say I am the ecosystem. Because if I believe that those animals, ecosystems, microorganisms, and reptiles, insects, all of them, if I believe they are as important as I am, I'm going to make more informed decisions on my environment. And the only thing that's going to benefit is everyone.
Okay. Thank you for your answer. I know our listening audience has thoroughly enjoyed learning about all of your work. Learn more about this program and others by visiting globalinnovationfieldtrip.org and innovationworld.org. Thank you for joining the Innovation World Young Collaborator podcast series. This is Zig signing off. Until next time.